I'd like to ask you something. What would America's founding fathers have done if they knew that someday a black man would be president of the United States? Our first president, George Washington, and many of his compatriots owned thousands of Negro slaves. Others, such as Thomas Jefferson, tried deporting America's black population to a West African state still known as Liberia. He wrote into the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, that a Negro shall be considered only 3/5 of a person, a non-citizen, unable to vote. Today, if you travel to our nation's capital, you'll read the following words inscribed in stone on the Jefferson Memorial. Quote, "Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than that these people, the Negroes, are to be free." Unquote. Thomas Jefferson's statement is allowed to end there, leaving visitors with the impression that our third president was a liberal integrationist. But this quotation from his autobiography has been taken out of its original context. Someone has selectively deleted the rest of Jefferson's words, which are, quote, "Nor is it less certain that the two races, equally free, cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them." Unquote. But what about Abraham Lincoln? He freed the slaves, so he must have loved them. Liberals like to imagine that by calling upon his memory, they lend authority to their racially integrated agendas. But this is what Lincoln said during his fourth presidential debate on September 18, 1858. Quote, "I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the black and white races. That I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say, in addition to this, that there is a physical difference between the black and white races which will ever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race." Unquote. Today, any politician running for public office, in fact, anyone making such a statement, would be loudly condemned as a racist of the worst possible kind, expelled from school or fired from his job, and arrested on charges of committing a hate crime. Yet, Lincoln, Jefferson, and Washington are supposed to be our country's great icons. No teacher, no one in the news or entertainment media will ever tell you what these men actually believed about so-called Afro-Americans. Nor will they tell you that blacks are responsible for more than 80% of violent crimes committed in our country, even though Negroes make up just 12% of its population. That must come as a shock to regular viewers of television, where blacks are around half the faces seen on the tube. Unlike their real-life versions, televised blacks are almost invariably portrayed as pitiful victims of injustice at the hands of white bigots, or lovable heroes deserving our adoration and emulation. This is because television is nothing more than a backed-up toilet overflowing with lies. It is a font of poison floating with stinking falsehoods in which truth dies and sinks. Beginning after the turn of the last century, race-mixing propagandists have taken particular delight in elevating half-breeds to superstar status. Television personalities and political celebrities of black and white parentage are more often placed upon the highest public pedestals for special homage. At the same time, no opportunity is missed to promote racially mixed unions, typically of a blonde white woman to a blue-black male, together with the couple's half-breed offspring, which invariably take after their African father. When we look around the world at racially mixed countries, we find such exotic lands as India, Morocco, and Mexico. These places are human garbage dumps, characterized by squalor, violence, starvation, filth, and disease on a colossal scale of hopeless misery. They were not always so. 4,000 years ago, a civilization of clean-swept boulevards and magnificent public baths flourished throughout the Indus Valley. 2,000 years later, Morocco was set with marble temples and gleaming health spas, a jewel in the crown of the Roman Empire. 500 years ago, conquistadors from Spain raised a prosperous colony upon the ruins of Aztec Indian human sacrifice and cannibalism. All of these formerly high cultures in Mexico, Morocco, and India were created exclusively by white civilizers. While colored natives may have supplied some of the labor, civilization was the product of white genius. So long as the white master builders preserved their dominance and racial integrity, society functioned as intended. But as they interbred with Negroes and other lowlife, white identity drowned in a raceless morass of darkening generations that bore less and less resemblance to their fair-skinned founding fathers. Their originally high intelligence level sank into an increasingly dumber and savage population. The once splendid civilizations of the Indus Valley, Central America, and North Africa decayed into the rotting urban centers now known as New Delhi, Tijuana, or Marrakesh. America stands in the same shadow that eventually reduced these formerly civilized centers to subhuman cesspools. Such putrid places graphically represent the goal set for our country by fanatic integrationists who embrace race mixing with all the fervor of religious extremists. Their aim is to reduce the United States to another Bangladesh or Sudan. The mass murderers of our posterity flaunt their sympathy for the colored downtrodden of this world in order to parade what they imagine is a kind of moral superiority over everyone else. These people are truly insane. Their real core motivation is a psychopathic loathing for everything and everyone white. That only can explain such hysterical intolerance of the slightest criticism for the race-mixed utopia they demand. They cannot work fast enough for the eventual extirpation of the white race through wholesale interbreeding with Congoid apes. Their aim is the dissolution of all the world's races into a single global souffle of genetic excrement. And anyone who raises an objection to their high-minded nightmare is condemned and ostracized as a racist, an enemy to what is ever fair and good. Yet, what we take for granted today as civilization is the exclusive product of white men and women. From computers and hair curlers to bicycles and space shuttles, everything we know as modern technology was brought about entirely by white inventors. It stands to reason that when their kind no longer exists, their creations will disintegrate, just like old American cars falling apart in the littered streets of Mexico City. While white people were building great civilizations around the world for the last 5,000 years, blacks in Africa never figured out how to make a wheel. They never built anything more substantial than a mud hut. They knew nothing about metal, glass, or tool. They never had a written language. Their technology did not extend beyond the tip of their wood spears. Their only medicine was voodoo. They never sailed on anything greater than a floating log, even though they resided along thousands of miles of coastline. And all this centuries before they could claim slavery as an excuse for their utter lack of know-how. They never put one stone upon another, thought of a light bulb, invented an airplane, designed a fountain pen, wrote a poem, painted a portrait, or initiated anything associated with civilized life. Although Afro-Americans have come to benefit from these things and more, they created none of them. They have always excelled, however, in those activities which characterize them best: violent behavior and monumental squalor. For proof, drive through the south side of Chicago, into Gary, Indiana, or black streets in any metropolitan area, if you dare. There you will see old, rotting buildings tottering above gang-infested sinkholes of urban filth. These are the ruins of white civilization, microcosms for what the rest of America is becoming. This national decay translates itself into escalating murders, assaults, rapes, robberies, and a virtual tidal wave of atrocities committed daily against white men, women, and children. Considered more important than their own self-defense, They are cautioned against racism when identifying their dark assailants. Because followers of the race-mixing dogma are indifferent to these white victims, outsiders rarely learn of their fate. They are not showcased on television, nor featured on the front page of a major newspaper. For example, a few years ago, charges were leveled against Duke University students accused of gang raping an innocent black girl. Months before the high-profile case collapsed because their ultra-liberal prosecutor was disbarred for falsifying the evidence against them, and the accuser herself turned out to be a lying half-wit, they were tried and found guilty by every major American newspaper and television network. The young white men were simultaneously and universally castigated as racists of the most awful type, meriting the severest punishment. Reverends Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson made daily telecasts deploring the climate of intolerance and sick racism that pervades our country. FBI spokesmen speculated that the alleged gang rape was a hate crime. Social services liberals swung into action to provide counseling and financial assistance for the bogus black victim and her family. While the falsely accused white students were being vilified across the nation week after week, Americans were pointedly not informed of another, this time authentic atrocity that was absolutely boycotted, deliberately ignored, hushed up, even censored from public knowledge. In a successful effort to contain all outside awareness of the story, no network anchorman or mainstream reporter announced the arrest in Kentucky of four black men and one black female for perpetrating some of the most ghastly crimes ever committed in U.S. history. They were accused of abducting and murdering a young white couple. While his girlfriend looked on, they castrated Christopher Newsom, 24, then burned him alive and fired several shots into him. Over the next several days, the satanic savages beat and raped his girlfriend, Shannon Christian, 23, and took turns urinating on her. On the fourth day, they cut off her breasts, stuffed a large variety of toxic chemicals, including floor cleaner, into her mouth, then slowly stabbed her to death. Not a word about this unspeakable crime was heard on the nightly news, because NBC, CBS, CNN, ABC, Fox, and all the rest of the alphabetical deceivers were obsessed at the time with the phony Duke University rape case. There was no appeal to the sensitivities of millions of regular viewers. No social services liberals thought to comfort the families of the white victims. The torture and murder of two young white people by five blacks is not a hate crime in the FBI's book. And Reverends Sharpton and Jackson had nothing to say. Their silence is part of the deliberate censorship of any information harmful to the artificial, false image of blacks perpetrated by America's news media masters. They realize that such censorship of the truth is vital to their race-mixing agenda. Yet we are invited to embrace these killer gorillas as our equals, no, as our physical, moral, and intellectual superiors. What then can we expect for the future? Unchecked, the forces of decline will climax in mid-century. Given the continuous and accelerating inundation of the United States by waves of immigrants from south of the border, Africa, Asia, India, and the Middle East, our continent's white population will have slipped to minority status before 2050. By then, our race will have become so polluted through interbreeding with subhumans, its identity will be progressively marginalized until it no longer exists. The next 40 years will also witness America's inevitable economic conquest by Red China and India, the very countries past U.S. presidents were so anxious to assist. Our standard of living will plummet to levels comparable with Ecuador or Somalia. Companies and businesses here will be largely Asian-owned, and Americans will have to work for mostly colored bosses. The U.S. dollar will eventually become so weak it must be replaced by some international currency. With health care largely in the hands of physicians from Pakistan or the Philippines, medical help will be rendered virtually useless, and certainly unable to keep pace with too many viral strains introduced by the endless deluge of germ-carrying colored immigrants. As in any fundamental social dislocation, a tsunami of criminal bloodshed will sweep across North America. Since white people by then will have been disarmed by gun control fanatics, their spirit of resistance diluted by decades of instilled health self-hatred, and all police forces predominantly black and brown, pale-faced victims can expect little protection and less mercy. They will suffer the same kind of massacres carried out in the past against hapless whites by Indian savages on the American plains. By then, the Bill of Rights promised that, quote, the right of the people to bear arms, unquote, will have been wiped away by the enemies of white America. One of its most prominent founders, Thomas Jefferson, insisted that, quote, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms against tyranny in government. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants, unquote. In the years to come, only ruins and garbage will be left to show that the world was once inhabited by temporarily civilized but ultimately self-destructive human beings. Sounds like a rather bleak scenario for the future. That certainly is what the evangelists of race mixing want us to believe. Things have gone too far for some white Americans. They have given up without a fight, resigned themselves and their posterity to defeat and oblivion. They point out the shameful fact that a black man, worse, a mongrel half-breed, is now President of the United States. It was not the combined support of Negroes and Hispanics that won the election for him. Their endorsement could have been expected. No, he was voluntarily installed in the White House by a solid majority of white voters, the same people being exterminated by the very elements he himself personally embodies. More than 65 years ago, Adolf Hitler warned U.S. servicemen during World War II that their taking up arms against his racially aware country would inevitably backfire on them by putting a Negro in the White House. They laughed at him. The vast majority of white Americans in the 1940s regarded blacks then as little more than subhuman clowns, hardly worthy of attention. The very notion of a black-faced president had more in common with a comedy skit than anything in the foreseeable future. Yes, some of those Second World War veterans who once thought Hitler's prediction so amusing are no longer laughing. A colored chief executive was unthinkable, ludicrous even, until the early 1970s, when big city mayoral positions and state governorships were first occupied by Negroes. If a black mayor, some argued, why not a black president someday? Coincidentally with the blacks advancing political power, all mainstream avenues of public information joined at every level of education to wring the last ounce of racial self-respect from our people. They were psychologically conditioned to embrace every manifestation of racial suicide in a comprehensive campaign as ubiquitous as it was relentless. A two-prong attack morally undercut white Americans by stressing their original sin of racism while constantly heroizing blacks as altogether superior, lovable creatures. Only decades of unrelieved and concerted propaganda made a Negro president possible. Without this incessant programming, such an incomparable disgrace would never have come to pass. Blacks are self-evidently too dim-witted to have achieved anything on their own. They represent merely a means to an end, namely the lethal pollution of our race. Once a white people have been poisoned by interbreeding, they disappear forever from the face of the earth, never to return. The original white builders of Egypt, Iran, Persia, India, and all the other lands that so long ago flourished, utterly vanished. Their formerly vibrant cultures reduced to dead ruins when they renounced the irreplaceable heritage of their pure blood. Racially weakened, their societies were beset by uncontrollable criminal violence, moral rot, economic collapse, political corruption, and cultural decay, until foreigners obliterated them. As the historian Will Durant warned us during the last century, quote, a great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within. Unquote. America is not exempt from that iron law, with Red China poised to take over from the United States as the next superpower. Accordingly, the U.S. seems doomed to repeat the same kind of suicide committed by past civilizations, and nothing can be done to stop it so long as the majority of Americans are either indifferent to their country's fate or actually aiding and abetting it. So, what are you going to do? Let it go? Will you allow yourself to be pushed into the background and told to shut up, afraid to raise your voice in a feeble word of protest? Isn't there anything you can do that really matters? There is. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with complaining to your congressman, signing petitions, or writing to a newspaper editor. Your enemies brush aside such obsolete methods with a contemptuous laugh. The very first thing you have got to do is get mad. No one can do anything really meaningful unless they're consumed with justifiable anger. God knows you have more to be enraged about than you can even imagine. But you know enough about white kids beaten by Afro-American gangsters. You know enough about white women raped and tortured by black monsters. You know enough about the anti-white lies you're supposed to swallow in silence. You've got to get up and shout in the face of your enemy, "I'm a white American, damn it, and I'm not going to take your race-mixing crap anymore." The psychotic Negrophiles are quick to denounce and label anyone who fails to embrace their savage yahoos as haters. But if you cannot hate someone who threatens your own loved ones with suffering and death, you're a failure as a human being. Anyone who won't defend those they love for fear of giving offense is a worthless coward. We can and will no longer be silenced by the race-mixing bullies pushing our world towards extinction. We will no longer be made ashamed of being white while others insist on black pride. We will not allow ourselves to be weakened by all those numerous, relatively petty differences that divide white men and keep us from forming a united front against the haters of our betrayed people. Those differences, how otherwise significant they may seem, must be put aside and not allowed to deflect one degree from our unity as white men and women. We must draw our wagons into a circle, close up our ranks in an unbreakable flank. Political, religious, class, ideological, or any of the other sorts of differences that threaten to divide our racial solidarity must be avoided. All that counts now is our self-awareness as white men and women. And anyone who attempts to detract one ounce from our racial unity has joined the enemies of white America. That the majority hates us or simply doesn't care about the survival of white America means nothing. When George Washington and his fellow revolutionaries took on the British Empire, the most powerful machine of its kind on earth, they were opposed by a solid majority of their own countrymen. Most people couldn't have cared less one way or the other. More than a third of Americans hated the Patriots, who were supported by just 15% of the colonial population. And from that small minority, only a fractional percentage actually participated in the war for independence. Yet, these few activists, against the will of a pro-British majority, themselves embodied a majority of willpower and energy to expel powerful invaders from our country. The American patriots who achieved this miracle were not liberals. They did not love their enemies. They were proud to be robust haters of the foreigners who imposed a frightful tyranny on the United States. The same situation confronts us today. Most white Americans are indifferent to the present decline and future destruction of their own race. To them, the only things that matter are making money and wasting their lives watching television. A majority of our fellow countrymen and women have been reduced to brainwashed lemmings, but not all of them. National election results for the past few years, where race-conscious candidates have run for office, have conclusively shown that 15% of our people understand and loathe the anti-white haters who have pushed us to the brink of extinction. That doesn't sound like much, but 15% of the U.S. population flushes out into 37 million race-conscious white Americans. Within those 37 millions lies a 3% minority of 75,000 potential activists, a veritable army of warriors. The chief task of the anti-white establishment has always been to drive a wedge between the 37 million white people who have not yet lost their souls to race mixing and the 75,000 fighters who can lead them to victory over the corruptors of our racial integrity. Anyone who can appreciate the high significance of these percentages understands at once that he or she is not an isolated individual, a freak for refusing to embrace the race-mixed propaganda of our times, unlike most everyone else. On the contrary, there are millions and millions of white Americans just as inwardly disgusted and repelled by the colored pollution of our people as we are ourselves. These numbers may encourage us, but our resistance must not depend on them. If the spirits of America's proudly racist founding fathers could return to see how we, their descendants, have allowed the liberty they fought and died for to have been stolen by repulsive fugitives from the African jungle, they would command us as Patrick Henry did. "We must fight," he said. Listen to these words he spoke more than 200 years ago. Quote, "I repeat it, sir, we must fight. An appeal to arms and the God of hosts is all that is left to us. Should I keep back my opinions at such a time through fear of giving offense, I should consider myself as guilty of treason toward my country. Why stand we here idle? What is it that the gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Unquote. That is the real American spirit that defied all the powers of hell and stood up to the hostile majority and won. It is a spirit no longer seen in our fellow countrymen because they have been lulled to sleep by the criminal conspirators against our lives, our liberty, and our posterity. How many more of our friends and family have to be mugged by black or Hispanic cowardly punks before you're mad enough to fight? How many more white kids are you going to allow to be beaten by colored gangbangers? How many more formerly white women must mate with darksome subhumans and bear their degraded offspring before our race is bred out of existence? For God's sake, man, get some guts! If you think things are bad now, just wait until 2040, when white people slip to minority status in the U.S. We've already become a minority in the American Southwest, and in major cities such as Chicago, where the white residents have been reduced to just one quarter of the total population, with a resultant spike in violent crime across the Windy City. Today, white people are already outnumbered by 8-1 odds on Earth. The American countdown has begun. Every 29 seconds, another illegal alien penetrates the United States. Every 10 minutes, another poisonous half-breed is spawned inside our borders. These hard facts embody the harsh truth about the real condition of our country. Get this through your head. America is threatened with death. Our struggle is for nothing less than our survival. Nothing in our lives is more important. No sacrifice we can make on its behalf too great. This struggle also ennobles us, however. It provides anyone who personally champions its cause the highest self-respect because it embodies the brightest truth in this age of lies. The truth, hidden or knocked to the ground, always rises again to reveal itself. But it is not enough to see through the anti-white bias of our day. In itself, the most magnificent sword is no more than an inanimate object until someone has the courage to grasp it firmly by the handle and wield it against his enemies. So, too, a hidden truth is worthless until it is unsheathed and used to boldly cut down all liars. Patrick Henry and his fellow patriots knew the hard truth of their times and were brave enough to raise it in defense of liberty. They were not black or Latino or Jewish or octoroon, such as that racial anomaly in the White House. His installation is only a benchmark in the death of the United States. More significantly, however, it is a national wake-up call that remaining 15% of white Americans get aware of their own racial identity, can hear and understand. It means that the hour for their survival is very late. The alarm is blaring with terrible urgency. Let that same signal also reignite the revolutionary spark of our white forefathers. Let it catch your own soul on fire and spread its flames across our betrayed nation. Some 65 years ago, a nameless hero, long among millions of warriors, declared, quote, "In times of gravest danger, the soul of our people erupts with elemental force to fend off all mortal blows and to assert itself. The soul's energy proves itself stronger than any numerical or material superiority. General readiness escalates to the highest action. What does his life mean to the individual if the sacred life of his race is threatened? He sacrifices himself so that that greater life is won. Superhuman feats are performed, and the word impossible is no longer known." Unquote. White America isn't dead yet. On the contrary, the sleeping giant is stirring from his propaganda-induced trance. And when he fully awakens, the puny enemies and congenital liars that scheme to kill him in his sleep will scatter like diseased vermin at the sight of his all-consuming rage. On your feet, white man! Stand up and fight!
Well, I think we're getting our bells mixed up there, but that's the end of class, boys and girls. You can go out and play now. Go out and pray, P-R-E-Y.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network with your humble host, Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. This show originates and is being broadcasted live from the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana. Right next door is Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern. It's a friendly little tavern where friends meet to drink and sometimes eat. Also nearby is Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase tanks, half tracks, or any other weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar. If you like, Tommy invites you to visit his big website, resist.com, and spend some time up there and look around. You can read news and views, listen to archive radio shows, listings of items to buy, information on where to send you donations, and just a lot of good useful information. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy another show from the Insurgent Radio Network.
Well, after that talk by Walter Dennis, I'm telling you, Dennis, I'm ready to go, man. I got my meat cleaver, my dagger, my blackjack, two or three other things. Ready to go, man. Well, here we are again. It's February the 1st, 2014, Saturn's Day, and here's Terrible Tommy right here in the dungeon. Yeah, and I want to tell you something. Tomorrow is my mama's birthday. I always could remember my mother's birthday because it's Groundhog's Day. It's hard for me to remember anybody else's birthday, except I keep charts on the wall over the house. But I always remember my mother's birthday because of Groundhog Day. The way it looks, I don't think there's any groundhogs going to come up at all. If I was a groundhog, I'd say, to hell with you people. you're like we are, but we got tons of snow, but now today it's starting to melt. Now, it's going to take 6 months for some of these mountains of snow to melt all the way off, but it's getting very slushy and slidey, and then it's supposed to start snowing again. I love it. Weather change, hey, doesn't bother me a bit. Come on, Mother Nature, give it to us. Especially like to see the news and the Weather Channel, all these city people are crying and moaning. Of course, even a lot of country people. Oh, it's so terrible. Oh. Well, you didn't have to scoop out a trail or a walk to your outhouse like I used to have to do when I was a kid. That outhouse was a couple of hundred feet from the main house, and it was a lot of times we had 2 foot of snow there, and you had to put on your old Charlie Brown hat and your coat and over your pajamas and scoop out a trail to the outhouse. You want to feel neglected and feel like you're put out like a Negro? Well, try that for a while. And I had a bedroom that was the last room in the house, way back in the back. And there was no central heating back then, no furnace in that house. We only had one coal stove, wood stove, in the living room. So by the time I went to bed at night, man, I'm telling you, it was colder than a well digger's heel. So we used to, and we didn't have electric blankets either, you know. So we had these, what they call a soapstone. It was about a foot square and about an inch thick. And it had a wire handle on it. You put it on top of your wood stove, your coal stove, while you're sitting around in the living room. And then when you go to bed, you take that old stone that's pretty hot by then and put it underneath your blankets and sheets on the bed. And that thing stayed pretty warm most of the night. So anyhow, that's the way we used to do it in the old days. I'm not even going to go into taking a bath in a steel tub behind the wood stove. That was an interesting operation. You know what? I never felt deprived. I can't remember feeling deprived. It was just one of those things, and things you had to do and things you had to get over and get over it. I didn't see anybody that had to live that way sitting around crying. White people, no. These conservatives, conservative Republican types, make you sick when they get on the radio and TV, say, on immigration, oh, it's got nothing to do with race, and as close as they'll come to talking about it, say, it's damaging our culture. Well, what do you mean? Your culture's an outgrowth of your race. And they go on and on, and of course, the progressives just walk right through them because they lie and they're hypocrites, and of course when they're called out on it, the liberal, so-called liberal, I don't know what you ever going to call it, Jew thinkers, they just walk all over them because it's obvious that they're lying and they're hypocrites and so forth, instead of saying, you're goddamn right it's racial. Anybody ask me about all these Mexicans coming through the border and up here, are you a racist? Is it cause of race? Hell yes, you dumbass. Of course, the other side, they use the same kind. They use code words, too, like, well, they just want to improve their life. Well, so does a bank robber. And so does some guy that sticks up a jewelry store. He wants to improve his life, too, and that's what they're doing. In fact, I have more respect for the bank robber or the jewelry store robber because they're straight out with it. And these guys, they want to come in here and then claim, well, I'm just coming up here taking your job and your housing and everything that you've got and your money and your job and everything. And it's just to better myself. Well, of course it's to better yourself. Oh, man. Hey, Mr. Rogue Progressive. Tell us about those goddarn Chinese and what they're doing over here. I can't get most of this information from the right wing, and so I have to go clear over to the progressives to get it.
Two nights ago, I was talking about, you know, I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, the glass city, Toledo, Ohio, glass capital of the world, back when America was an industrial giant and not declining former empire that we have now become. And I was talking about the Chinese now provide the glass that is needed, ironically, to expand the Toledo Museum of Art, which was endowed originally by the Edward Drummond Libby family, which is Libby Glass, the glass magnate, the Libby family. I don't know if they were billionaires in their time. They were certainly the equivalent of that. But the glass industry, of course, left the Midwest, left Toledo like so many different industries did, thanks to NAFTA and other factors, and moved to China. So, or moved somewhere, or just dissolved. But the Chinese now provide the glass to Toledo. Well, on Wednesday, 2 days ago, the California Senate provided new details about construction lapses on the eastern span of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. And this report raises some doubts about the long-term reliability of this $6.5 billion project. The California Senate report was prepared by an outside consultant for the Committee on Transportation and Housing. And it offers a background for a hearing that was held earlier today to examine allegations of lapses in quality control during a push to complete the structure, which was running years behind schedule and billions over budget. Here are some of the report's key revelations. Quality control managers found thousands of cracks in welds produced by Chinese contractors for the span's signature tower and roadway. Rather than ordering all the needed fixes, top California Department of Transportation managers replaced those who discovered the problems. We just don't like whistleblowers in this country, do we? Huh? We just don't like them. Hey, look! Some fracture lines, some cracks in the welds. The bridge is going to collapse. Well, get that guy out of here real quick. Here's another revelation. Millions of dollars were paid to the same Chinese contractor to speed up work after it fell behind schedule, and bridge officials urgently wanted faster results. Here's something else. Bridge officials rejected warnings in 2008 that suspect anchor rods for the suspension span were not adequately tested. Oh, some of those rods snapped last year. This is Chinese workmanship. See, the I wouldn't buy a goddamn thing from the Chinese. I swear to you. This is a nation of hustlers, liars, cheats, sneaks. It's state capitalism, which is probably the worst kind of capitalism. This is another word for fascism, by the way. Every single thing I have ever seen that had any kind of a connection to China, am I exaggerating? Yes. Was either defective, poorly made, something that it was supposed to be, yet wasn't, shoddy workmanship, terrible materials. When, you know what was one of the most shocking things for me personally? I had about 90% of my thyroid excised about 12 years ago. What was it, Kathy? Hypothyroidism? Hashimoto's, wasn't it?
Yeah, you had a benign tumor.
Right. I had a huge tumor that was growing when I was in Chicago. And they cut it out, and they also took most of my thyroid. And as a result, they gave me Synthroid. The doctor said, all right, you have to take this hormone replacement drug for the rest of your life. Keep everything in balance. Okay, and it's worked just fine. And one day, just for the hell of it, I looked up the name of the company that was producing the Synthroid that I was taking, and it was a company that had ties to China. And shortly after that, I saw a program on one of the newscasts that showed how the synthetic thyroid was being produced in China. In houses in so-called kitchen factories where they would take pig thyroids. Remember that, Kathy? There'd be huge, nasty-looking pots boiling on stoves inside people's homes. These are scientists, right? No, they're not. They're just people trying to make a living in China. And into these huge, steaming, filthy, stinking pots would go pig thyroids. And they would boil this stuff down until it was like some kind of mush. And you know, there'd be kids running around, chickens running out of the house, dogs everywhere. You know, you wonder if one of the dogs was going to wind up in the pot or what. And then this stuff was dried, was laid out on tables, and then turned into a powder and then sent to the United States where a pharmaceutical company, or sent someplace where a pharmaceutical company would then turn it into pills and then give it to half-witted morons like me who need hormone replacement therapy where it concerns a now disappeared thyroid. Well, I saw this thing and I just went, OMFG. So I immediately got on the phone and called my doc, who's same guy I've been going to for about 15 years now, who takes real good care of me, you know, as long as I show up every year for the physical. And I said, you know, blah, 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 did you see that? He said, yeah, I saw it. He said, blah, blah, blah. So we switched to a company that is an American pharmaceutical company that doesn't use pig thyroids or whatever the hell they were from China. And that, I mean, that was it for me as far as Chinese products were concerned. Now, the reason this wound up in the news is because a lot of this Synthroid that was being made from ingredients put together in China was either hideously contaminated, no kidding, with bacteria or some kind of creepy crawlies or H1N1 swine flu viruses. It was just horrible. So why would the state of California, if that's who's responsible for the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge, why would they contract with Chinese steel manufacturers? Money? You think? An outside consultant for the Committee on Transportation and Housing in California, the report also said that officials frequently told contractors and employees not to put concerns about the quality of this bridge into writing, essentially to avoid disclosure under the State Public Records Act. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Anyway, the article that was in I don't even know. I have no idea where I got this, but the article goes on to talk about the terrible workmanship, the poor quality of materials used by the Chinese. And I think that's a given. The Chinese are not industrial artisans. I'm not taking anything away from Chinese dance or poetry or music or art or yada, yada, yada. But the industrialization of China has been something that has, they have compacted, 30 years? Or they've compacted 200 years of industrialization into 30? And aren't we at a point now where two or three of the world's richest human beings are Chinese? Whatever happened to Mao? Whatever happened to the Cultural Revolution? Whatever happened to Little Red Book? Whatever happened to the re-education camps? I'm not advocating in the least that those be returned. But to go from a fascist communist state, and that's not a contradiction in terms, to a fascist corporate state in the space of 30 years, and the top echelon of the Chinese thugs are the ones taking all the money, just like in Russia, same thing. And the garbage that these people are putting out, these Chinese industrialists, so-called, are putting out into the global market, and it's a crime, a literal crime. So if you use the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge I don't know. You might want to check with your, with Caltrans. Is that it? California Transportation Department. And ask them why the California Department of Transportation managers, ask them why they replaced those people who discovered the problems rather than firing the Chinese and bringing in an American company to produce the steel and the rods and the bolts and the roadways and the cables and all the things that eventually, and sooner rather than later, collapse. And then what happens when the bridge comes down and, oh, I don't know, maybe 700, 800, 900 people die?
Thank you, Mr. Rogue Progressive, for digging out that information. I appreciate it. If I ever get up to San Francisco again, I'm never going to go over that bridge, I'll tell you that. Well, yesterday in the middle of a snowstorm, a UPS man dropped by and handed me a big box over the fence and got inside, and I didn't know what the hell's going on here. And I opened it up, and we got some T-shirts here from one of our good buddies. Said he was going to send us some T-shirts. It's got they're nice pale blue or blue T-shirts. And they got on the front 14-5 and shut up. So anyhow, we got those T-shirts, and he told me to make sure that Stray Dog got one and She-Wolf. And of course I myself and my lady, if she wants to wear one, and I'm so we go from there. We'd have a few left. If you want to get a hold of one, just contact us, okay? But also that contributor gave some money for Matt Hale, and I put that in an envelope and sent it out. And I had some funds come in from somebody else for Matt Hale, so I put $100 in the mail today to go to Matt Hale, so I think he's going to be a happy camper. Yeah. But also, I think, yeah, the same person sent me, I forget how much, to split up among other prisoners. So we're going to be sending out, you know, like 10 or 20 to half a dozen prisoners. $40 going to Matt Hale came from out there in Rhode Island. I won't give any more information. And the other one I know came from California, but I need the email. Always, whenever you send me anything, always put an email in the package, because that's what I go by. I don't go by addresses almost none of the time. I go by email addresses, and sometimes people will send me donations for the radio show, the program, and I got names, I got addresses, but I got no email. And that can get us screwed up. Speaking of Spray Dog, he sent me a little note here and commenting on this Dutton fellow up there in Leith, North Dakota. And he said, I have hundreds of hours of court appearances and have never heard of a defendant pleading guilty to all of the crimes that they're charged with. Well, I haven't either. He evidently said he pled guilty to all 7 charges without even plea bargaining. Smells like an agent to me, he says. No one is that stupid. Well, I don't know. I don't know, Stray Dog. There's some stupid people out there. These Army guys are returning home brain damaged, he says. Talk to you later. Stray Dog from Browntown. And the odd thing is, why would an attorney let a guy plead to all 7 charges? I mean, no legitimate attorney that's looking out for his client is going to do that. But maybe they just said, the DA said, you got to plead to all of them or we're not going to let you out of here. And he was so anxious to get out of here. I don't know whether this guy had ever been in jail before, but being in jail is not the end of the world. Couple of donations in here from Indianapolis. I got it. And let's see, what else we got here? I think I mentioned this yesterday. We got a donation in here from JNR, and you know who that is. I think they're up Washington State way, but that's all the info you're going to get from me. I don't know whether I mentioned this yesterday, but I got a letter from, I believe this is a federal prison out in California, And I'd send him some stuff, and he said, do you have any white rock or rock and roll CDs you could send? Those as well. Me and a couple of comrades enjoy the books you send and the papers. We'd really like some music. No tapes. They have to be CDs, Screwdriver, or anything like that. Well, I didn't know you could get CDs sent into the prison. So I put a half a dozen in. I got scads of them around here that I'll probably never listen to again. Not that they weren't good at the time, but I'm more into the written word and the talking word than the music. So I put a half a dozen in, and also they said they get war papers in that prison. Now, I don't know how many prisons around us still will let war papers in, but if you know anybody that that can tell you that they can get a war paper in the prison, well, just let me know and I'll send them a freebie. Okay, and I got a note in here from Minnesota with a donation yesterday. There you go. Well, here's a little cut from Ari Rabinoff, this little Jew that's on satellite radio. I don't know whether he's on regular radio or not. Sometimes when he criticizes the government, he does a fairly good job, but you touch the race issue, watch him. And you'll notice that all these Jew people that are on talk radio, they pretty much play down that they're Jewish, and too many non-Jews out there are too stupid to realize that when they run into one of these guys, they are very good at what they do, and they're very good at picking apart your argument if you're not careful. Well, all these people, Republican, right-wing, white types, call in trying to make a point, but they're trying to get around the race issue. And you can't get around it. They'll nail you every time. You got to just come out and say it. Now, sometimes you can't even get by the screener, but just don't tell the screener that you're going to talk about race. But anyhow, I'm going to play a little clip, and you can see. But see, subconsciously, they have antennas sticking out of their head. Most Jews, not all Jews, because I've run into ones that are very much against, and they're very racist, too. So, but most of the time, they've got antennas out their head if they sense any kind of a racial position, pro-white, or something that can try to get you into being a stormtrooper or something like that. And so they're ready for you. And they chew you up and spit you out. Let's listen to this guy a little bit here. It's towards the end of the show anyhow, right?
They're not being truthful. I wish they would just be honest and say, look, we don't like Mexicans, because you know that, but they won't say that. They come up with weird. That's.
Don't get into that. I'll take care.
That's not.
Get into your papers.
That's not what. That's not. They're not being truthful. I wish they would just be honest and say, look, we don't like Mexicans, because you know. That, but they won't say that. They come up with weird things. I remember a few years ago, Lou Dobbs on CNN talked. They'll make up stories. Lou Dobbs on CNN talking about they're bringing in leprosy into this country. It wasn't true.
Office one time talking to a social worker in Oceanside, California, and he pointed out two people in the next room, and he said one had TB and the other had leprosy. And they were aliens coming into this country. So this guy's, he is lying, a lying Jew.
It all tends to be a bunch of lies and a bunch of things reverting back to xenophobia. Look, we need a sensible immigration system in this country. We need a system that allows us to actually control our borders. And we need a system that actually lets us deal with the fact that we have 11 million people here undocumented. That we have 11 million people here who are not part of the system. And for many of them, they're not going back. Many of them have made lives here for decades. They're not returning to their home countries, regardless of what we say. So we actually have to confront and deal with it. The problem is the racist wing of the Republican Party has forced...
What racist wing? What racist wing?
Themselves into a corner. Has forced their party into a corner because they know, the Republican Party, people like John Boehner know, that their long-term electoral success depends on passing things like immigration reform.
Not true.
They know that for a fact. But they also know that their members will be primaried by the racist wing of their party if they do what's right. Jim in Pennsylvania, what's going on? What's going on?
Howie?
Yeah?
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good. What's going on, Ray?
Well, you know, I understand about the immigration and stuff like that, but, you know, if you keep allowing people in the country, man, aren't you always keeping a lower poverty level that, you know, you always have to, you keep punishing the poverty level, you know what I'm talking about? You're not raising all boats if you keep letting people into our country.
Except for the fact we've always let people into our country, and people come to this country so they can advance beyond their...
But aren't they supposed to... Isn't it immigration for the host country, not the immigrant? To benefit the host country?
But it does benefit us. First off, immigration is one of the things that has made our country so strong, is that when immigrants were looking for...
Again, when you buy into the we's all equal, equality myth, you see how they get you? Well, in years past, we had all these Germans come in, and French, and English, and Italian, and all these people. They came in here. Well, these Mexicans are equal to them. They're just as good as they are. These mestizos are just as creative and as good as they are. See, when you fall into that trap, and watch how he maneuvers people.
Over the course of the history of this country, for economic reasons, turned here. It's one of the things that made our country what it is.
Well, I understand that, but you still got, you know, you've got to be able to slow immigration. I mean, during Reagan, they gave 7,000 or 7 million people immigration status, and they were gonna secure the border a little better. Now they didn't secure nothing. Now we got another 12 million here or 20 million now, and then 10 years from now it'll be 30 or 40 million.
Yeah, and we have to actually deal with that in a sensible way, and we actually have to deal with a chaotic system and make it work better, Ray. I thank you for your call there.
So you notice how he retreats into, well, yeah, we do need a sensible, I guess that's a Jewish immigration control in this country. But the Jews, they don't want any control. They don't want any borders. Jews don't want that. How are they going to move their tribe around? They don't care about anybody else. We got to keep these borders open so we can move our tribe around, even if it means 20 million Mexicans come into this country. But you see, so the guy's saying, well, we got to do something. And he's saying, well, yes, we got to have some control. But the minute you say, okay, let's control it, oh, you're a racist. And if you don't say it just right, genuflect before the mestizo and say, well, he's just as equal as I am, and he deserves everything I do, and it's okay if he gets my birthright and I get shit, you know. Oh, those Jews on the talk radio, they really have a ball pointing out what hypocrites and liars these goddamn right-wing Republicans are. You know, instead of coming right out and say, you're damn right. Now, they're not equal to our people. They're not equal to the people that came in here from all over Europe and settled this country and made it big. These people aren't going to come in here and produce a new wave of creative abilities and powers into this country at all. So anyhow, here again, most of our problem is caused by our own people, our own race, because they're cowards, most of them. Even at the best, they're cowards, because they will not say, yes, I am a white racist, and I'm a white racial separatist, and I don't want non-whites coming in and drowning my population. Simple. How hard's that? And then watch them go ballistic and shut you off. But that's okay. Just get a couple of sentences in. That's enough. Well, that's it for now, boys and girls. And I'll be back, let's see, this is Saturday. I'll be back Monday. Yeah, Monday. Tomorrow is my day off, so to speak. I got a lot of paperwork to do and catching up on letters and all that kind of stuff. And then I got some honeydew, too. So we'll see you. We'll see you Monday at 14:05. Don't forget to shut up.
Be a midnight raider. Terrible Tommy.